Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
Increasingly in recent years, there are a lot of people with negative thoughts with regard to the future. Something that in my waning days, that I can no longer do too much about other than to continue to project some sort of positivity.
I actually saw one piece in particular that was about how some university campuses are bringing in therapists specifically to deal with eco-anxiety in the students. And the way they were describing the sort of treatment or the kind of therapy approach was almost like trying to come to terms with a terminal illness, finding peace with the environment dissolving around us. And I felt so angry when I read that piece, and also just so disappointed, because if instead of inspiring people to act, we're asking them to accept that the world is on the decline, I think, you know, that's not the right message. We know exactly what to do to save the planet and stop climate change, and today it's a political problem.
Politicians now have got to be thinking not of the next election or of Ottawa, but of Canada and the world. We have a small contingent here. Laurentian is now a nature positive university, thinking about climate change positively. And there are 120 universities across the world that are doing that. That's what still gives me hope, that there are people out there who get it. Now all we have to do is get the politicians to get it.
People who are developing policy are not listening to the facts. So you need to be able to communicate the facts to that audience. But the audience that is really going to count in the future, it's going to be youth. Youth don't need facts. What they need is inspiration. They need to hear the stories of recovery, like the fin whale and the blue whale at the moment, that are increasing in population. Like around Sudbury here, where the trees have changed the landscape. We've planted 10,100,000 trees around Sudbury. And the air quality is vastly better. The emissions from the smelters are about 2% of what they used to be. It's those stories of hope that young people need to hear.
So how to bring people to care about conservation is something I'm obsessed with and I think about all the time. And there are a lot of reasons for that. One is everybody, no matter how they vote politically or who they choose to, you know, represent them, can enjoy watching the stars at night. Often likes to garden, thinks their pet is a part of their family, appreciates nature with the same enthusiasm and level of passion. So it can sometimes be disheartening to know that none of us as individuals is going to solve one of these crises. The most we can do is bring environmental issues, and I don't mean the most as in like, sadly, the most we can do. I mean, the most we can all do is bring it into our conversations and vote with our ideals in mind and hold our elected officials accountable to make those big institutional changes, to regulate industry, to make it such that we don't have to make the choice at the grocery store, which is the sustainable choice and which is not. They should all be sustainable choices. What I really, really, really want to see is that we untie the knot that right now is tying environmental preservation and regulation to one side of the political aisle and not the other, and make it more of this kind of stewardship story and doing good works to enrich our own local environments and then ultimately the global environment. There's a wildlife biologist in California Phil Pister was his name, and he was a fisheries biologist, so in charge of managing game fish, but also endangered species and other fish species. And there are a bunch of really isolated lakes in California that were left after glacial recession. And there are some fish species that are only found in one or a couple of these lakes. And there's a fish species called Owen's pupfish that's one of these examples. And it was isolated to a room-sized pond in, oh gosh, I hesitate to put a year on it, late 60s maybe. And it started to dry up one year. And so some colleagues came into Phil's office and said, if we don't act now, fish slough is going to dry up and all the Owen's pupfish will go extinct. And so he got in his truck with these colleagues, drove out, and they tried to get all the remaining fish that were still alive into kind of a deep area of the slough where they could pen them off and keep them safe. They did as much as they could. His colleagues left, and he decided to go check on them one more time. And he went and realized that they were dying because they had chosen a place in the slough where there wasn't enough oxygen and enough sort of flow of the water. And so he got some buckets from his truck and some aerators, and he took every living individual he could find and he put them in those buckets. And he carried the buckets back to his truck and to another nearby pond where they would do better. But he had this thought as he was carrying the fish to his truck that if he tripped and he spilled those buckets, he would be responsible, he alone, for, you know, causing the extinction of this species.
I knew this was the only place, at least I'm quite sure this was true, the only place that they existed anywhere. And I had the only fish in these buckets. And if something had gone wrong, as I mentioned in the article I wrote for Natural History Magazine, if I tripped and these fish, the species would be extinct now. It's just that ragged edge of extinction.
And it's the most profound story because in many ways, that's all of us, all of humans today. So many species are in our hands and we can decide if we work to save them, to aerate their bucket, or we let them, you know, go to extinction.
Part of what I've learned is very important is not to speak about the facts as though it's going to be doomsday. That isn't helpful. Because people need to leave feeling there's a reason to work hard in order to try to deal with, to cope with the impact that they're facing.
One example of a neat sort of restoration story locally is this enormous restoration effort at the mouth of the Don River, where the Don River meets Lake Ontario. In the late 1890s, Toronto filled in a lot of that area to build up industry, but also because the marsh had become, the wetland that was historically in that area, had become infected. It was holding cholera. It was receiving a lot of sewage from the city without being cleaned first. So people saw it as a pretty gross spot. At the time, it was a pretty gross spot. And part of this restoration effort has been digging out and removing all of this fill. And when they did so, they saw local native wetland plant species begin to grow from those excavated soils that had been still and, you know, not growing for 100 plus years.
When we moved here in 1972, the tree behind me had a diameter of 5 inches. It has, in the time since, become our air conditioner. Several years ago, when we had to change a furnace, we thought, well, we better put in an air conditioner at the same time. I think this was about 6 or 7 years ago, and that air conditioner has been used 5 single days. We don't need it. We have an air conditioner. And I think that says a great deal about the importance of trees as we think about climate change, obviously, when you think that that is free in comparison to, again, using up fossil fuels that we can ill afford to do.
There is urgency, and I also understand lots of people are inspired by, you know, imperative and by rage and those feelings too. But I do think we will attract more people to care if we make it hopeful and we make it about our own lives and experiences rather than just another, you know, number about the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere, which that news can be overwhelmingly bad and scary to face.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.